70, 75, 80, 85, 90, 95, 300.
You would not call Mr. Ralph Nickleby a merchant, not exactly a merchant, nor a banker, a lawyer, a tradesman, no, certainly not that, not even a gentleman of independent means, and yet he keeps a spacious house in Golden Square, where street players keep company with groups of swarthy, mustachioed men who drink and smoke and glare at passers-by. He has a door with a brass plate on it announcing office, so it's clear that he does, or pretends to be, in the way of some kind of business. And if business means money, then for a certainty, Mr. Ralph Nickleby is in the way of that. And if business means trouble, then for a certainty, anyone who comes between Mr. Ralph Nickleby and his money is in the way of that, too. So it is, one morning in the year, well, no matter with the year, Mr. Ralph Nickleby sits in his office and looks at his clerk, one Newman Noggs, who has handed him a letter.
Postmark, Strand, black wax, black border, woman's hand, the letters CN in the corner.
Mr. Noggs, as is his habit at work, says nothing.
Black wax, eh? And I know this writing. I do. Shouldn't be surprised if my brother were dead.
Mr. Ralph Nickleby is right on two counts. He's not surprised. Never is, if he can help it. And yes,
dead.
Mr. Noggs nods and asks after the widow and...
The children? Oh, yes, Noggs. Two of them. Alive, great, hungry, expensive. The children and the mother, all three here in London.
Newman Noggs' face goes through a series of spasms, as if to say, God have mercy on anyone who might throw themselves on the charity of Mr. Ralph Nickleby.
Noggs, what are you making faces about? Go to your work. What do I pay you for? Brothers. My brother never did a thing for me, nor did I ask him to. And yet, no sooner is the breath out of his body than I'm supposed to support these people, this woman, these children, these vast appetites. I never saw them. Why should I feed them, house them, clothe them?
Such are the reflections of Mr. Ralph Nickleby as he leaves his office and makes his way towards the Strand, where he knocks upon the door of a house which announces itself, with two portraits fixed to the door frame, as the dwelling of a painter of miniatures. Admitted by the maid, the man of business requests...
Mrs. Nickleby.
Exit the maid, enter...
Oh, sir!
A mincing young lady of around 50.
Miss MacReady.
A vision in yellow. Yellow hat, yellow dress, yellow complexion.
Please, to come through to my attendant.
You give a moment, ma'am.
A strong countenance. Have you ever sat before?
You mistake my purpose, I see, ma'am.
I do?
You do. I have no money to throw away on miniatures. Oh. I wanted to ask about some lodgers here.
A miniature would most nobly catch...
I have the address correct. Nickleby?
Yes. Top floor.
Top floor, Nickleby. A widow?
A widow.
A poor widow?
I do believe she may well be poor.
I happen to know, ma'am, she is. I know her circumstances, ma'am, intimately. In fact, I am a relation of the family. And I should say, ma'am, I should recommend you not to keep them here, ma'am.
I should hope, sir, that were there any, financial embarrassment.
There will be.
Then the lady's family would come.
No, they wouldn't, ma'am.
Then if I am to understand that...
You may count on it.
Things would look very different, if you're sure.
I am the family, ma'am. I cannot support their extravagance. There you have it.
She seemed the lady...
Mrs. Nickleby?
So terribly low, you understand. Poor woman. She's extremely pleasant.
She is extremely poor.
Are the children nicer or better behaved?
Or poorer.
Oh, you couldn't expect to meet more pleasant, but still...
Still, indeed, ma'am.
I cannot be expected, alone as I am, unprotected at present. I cannot lose the rent.
Of course you can't. Now, if you'll excuse me...
Babs, before you go...
But here the conversation ends as Mr. Ralph Nickleby slips smartly from the room and begins to climb the stairs towards the top floor. At the first floor, he pauses. This Ralph Nickleby, who is neither quite businessman or lawyer or tradesman or anything you might put your finger upon. Anything except certain that no one, nor friend, nor family, is going to put their finger in his deep-lined pockets. And on he goes, upwards to the top floor, perhaps reflecting on the two great truths of his life. Money is the only source of happiness and power, and its acquisition, by all means short of felony, is both lawful and just. Or perhaps he thinks of his lunch, or Miss La Creevy, or nothing at all. A lady in deep mourning admits Ralph Nickleby. She leans on the arm of a slim and very beautiful girl of about 17. A young man, maybe a year or two older, steps forward, smiling, and takes Ralph's hat from his hand.
Uncle, welcome.
You, I suppose, are my nephew Nicholas.
That is my name, sir. So my mother.
Well, ma'am, how do you do? You must bear up against sorrow, eh? I always do.
Mine was no common loss.
No uncommon loss, ma'am. Husbands die every day, and wives too, I believe.
And brothers, Uncle Ralph.
And puppies, and pug dogs likewise, sir. You didn't mention in your letter what my brother's complaint was, ma'am.
Oh, the doctors could find no particular disease. We have too much reason to believe it was of a broken heart.
I can understand a broken neck. A man might die very well of that. Or he might suffer a broken arm, broken head, broken neck, broken nose. But a broken heart, it don't mean a thing. Not one thing. A man can't pay his debt, so he dies of a broken heart, and suddenly, why, his widow is a martyr.
Some people, I believe, have no hearts to break.
How old is this boy, for God's sake?
Nicholas is very nearly 19.
And what do you mean to do for your bread, sir?
Whatever it is, sir, I shall not live off my mother.
You'll have little enough if you try.
Whatever it is, I won't look to you to make it any more.
Hold your tongue, boy.
Oh, Nicholas, please don't speak in that way to your uncle.
Fine beginnings, Mrs. Nickleby, fine beginnings.
The uncle and the nephew look at each other. The mother, the sister are frozen, silent. The face of the older man is stern, hard and forbidding. That of the younger, open, handsome, innocent. The old man's eyes are shrewd and keen, searching always for the advantage. The younger's bright with the light of the future, full of hope and spirit. And so, for some moments, they stand staring at each other. Then slowly but surely into the soul of Ralph Nickleby creeps at first the suspicion that in some indefinable way he is the lesser man of the two. The suspicion and now the certainty that he can no longer look into the eyes of this boy before him.
Enough. Enough.
And in this moment, in his heart's core, is born a great and abiding hatred.
Your husband's creditors, there is...
nothing left for us.
And you spent what little you had coming to London to see what I could do for you.
Your brother's children. It was his dying wish that you might... that I should appeal.
Your daughter, this girl... what's she fit for?
Oh, Kate has been well educated. Tell your uncle...
Enough, be silent. Girls are better, sir. An apprenticeship at some governess school. You're not, I take it, too genteel, too delicate to work?
She is not, sir. My sister is.
She's pretty enough, the little thing. No doubt she... but you, sir, have you ever done anything...
I have.
...that might prove of use in the world?
No,
I thought not. This is how you were brought up, huh?
Oh, Nicholas had such education as his poor father could give him. He hoped...
to make something of him one day. The old story, always thinking and never doing. My brother was a thoughtless, inconsiderate man. And nobody, I'm sure, can have better reason to feel that than you, Mrs. Nickleby.
Oh, if only my poor dear husband had listened to my advice. We would not be in this... Oh, if only he
if
had
only.
Listened.
Indeed, the poor dear departed had never listened to his wife, except upon the one occasion, a matter of investment, and had ruined himself in consequence. But all that is a different story. Mr. Ralph Nickleby, after listening to the widow's tale with a sort of half smile on his face...
Are you willing to work, sir?
Of course I am.
Then see here, sir. This caught my eye in the newspaper this morning, and you may thank your lucky stars for it. Mr. Wackford Squeers Academy, Do the Boys Hall, Yorkshire. Yous are boarded, closed, booked, etc., etc. Terms, 20 guineas per term. Able assistant master wanted. Salary, £5 per annum. Master of Arts preferred. You're familiar with Yorkshire, I take it?
He's not a Master of Arts.
That can be overcome.
But the salary is small, is it not?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hush, Nicholas. Your uncle must know best.
Secure this situation and your fortune is made. If you don't like it, well, then get one for yourself. Knowing no one or nothing of life in London, find it yourself, I say, and I'll pay you £1,000. At least I would if I had it. Well, sir?
If I'm fortunate enough to get this post, what will become of...
Your mother and sister will be supported by me and placed in an independent situation. If you take this position.
Oh, Nicholas.
Then let us try our fortune with Mr. Squeers at once. He can but refuse.
He won't do that. He'll be glad enough to have you on my recommendation. Make yourself useful to him and you'll be a partner in the school in no time. Why, think if you were to die... Your fortune would be made, my boy.
To be sure. Or should some young nobleman being educated at the academy but take a shine to me, why, well, I might become his tutor when he takes his grand tour through all Europe.
Oh, to be sure.
And you would visit Mother and Kate too, and he would be sure to fall in love with Kate because everyone does, and, well, who knows, eh, Uncle?
To be sure.
Oh, how happy we shall be. Mother, the pain of parting is nothing to the joy of meeting again.
Oh, Nicholas, surely you won't leave us now. At once. At this very moment.
Oh, Mother. Dear Kate, can you not see it? The future so bright before us.
Oh, Nicholas.
And so this simple family, born and bred in retirement and wholly unacquainted with the world, mingle their tears together at the thought of their first separation. And their fortune to be infallibly made by Nicholas at the Academy of Dotheboys Hall, Yorkshire.
Let us not waste time, young man, lest some more early candidate presents himself.
Of course, of course. Mother, Kate, I must go. We must go. Uncle, I have misjudged you. Forgive me. Come, let us go.
And deprives you of the fortune to build all your castles in the air.